to Short Hops, powered by RotoWire.com. Derek Van Riper here, as always, with Bernie Pleskoff after a one-week holiday break. Although, I'd like to point out, we tried to record last week before Thanksgiving, and technology simply didn't allow that to happen. Bernie, what's going on? How was your Thanksgiving?
So it was great, except for the very last day we were in Ohio, and my wife gets an email from a neighbor asking if anyone knows, and she gave an address, that there's flooded water running out of this house. So we look at the address, and it's our house. So what happened was a pool pipe broke, and 15,000 gallons of water gushed out of our pool into the backyard, the front yard, and you will not believe this. By the time we got home late that night, you could not see a drop of water because it had drained into the ground in the hot baking sun of Arizona. Unreal.
Wow. No damage to the house?
None. Zero, thank you.
That's fantastic. How bizarre is that? 15.
It's weird.
That's a lot of water to just have kind of soak up into the ground and not destroy anything. It's great that the ground could actually take it. But wow, that's an interesting way to get some news over Thanksgiving when you're out of town. It had to be unnerving trying to fly back and not knowing what you're going to get.
Yeah, you're helpless. You've seen the pool DVR, every drop of water, every drop.
It's a lot of water and very, very bizarre. Well, Bernie, since we last spoke, a lot has changed. Free agency really getting underway as a handful of moves have been made. Some trades have gone down. I want to start with a trade that happened on Friday. The A's traded Josh Donaldson to the Blue Jays, and the A's are really retooling that roster. Big sellers at this point early in the offseason. Maybe Jeff Samardzija is next, but the return for Josh Donaldson, Brett Lowry, Franklin Barreto, Sean Nolan, and Kendall Graveman going to Oakland straight up for Josh Donaldson.
Well, I have to tell you, I was in total shock. I couldn't believe that. And see, I have him ranked, Donaldson ranked, right behind Beltre in the American League. And soon he will surpass Beltre because Beltre is getting a little bit older. But I'll tell you what, to trade Josh Donaldson, I have to scratch my head. And there are other players in the deal. But let's talk about Donaldson and Lowry just for a minute. You know, Donaldson is not just a good hitter. He is a hitter with power. He can hit the gaps. And he plays an outstanding Gold Glove third base. He came up as a catcher in the system. Had played third base in the minor leagues, but actually was promoted as a catcher. And then they had a need at third base. Donaldson took over, took the job and ran with it, and he is just a great player.
It's been such a surprising path for Donaldson. You mentioned that he used to be a catcher. The breakout in 2013 was really something that I don't think very many people could see coming. He went from being a .241 hitter and a .289 on base guy in 2012 to a .301 hitter with a .384 on base while swatting 24 home runs in 2013. I know there were some signs in the second half of 2012 that pointed to the possibility of a big step forward, but that he became this type of player and that good of a defender at third base had to be a surprise even to the A's. Now, several years of club control still on Josh Donaldson. I believe it's at least three. Cool. It's 4 years. Yeah. 4 years. It's going to be four expensive years because of arbitration, so maybe the Blue Jays will lock him up with some kind of pre-free agency sort of deal. But at the same time, he was a cornerstone on that roster. They don't really have a third baseman built in to replace him.
No, and I don't get – well, they do. It's going to be Lowry. That's what's going to happen. He's going to play third base. And, you know, he's delighted to get off of the AstroTurf in Toronto and play on grass and dirt in Oakland. So that may improve his game. But, you know, DVR, I have a real issue of this guy staying healthy. He just has not been healthy with Toronto, and part of that could be the turf.
Is part of it also that Lowry crashes into dugouts and just plays really hard? And
yeah, he does. He does.
I mean, the good news for him is that there's more foul territory in Oakland than there is anywhere in the big leagues. So he has all sorts of room to roam and not crash into a dugout railing or a wall. I mean, he'll still probably find them once in a while anyway. But I guess the upside here, and Lowry is going to be under control for a few seasons as well. He will be a free agent after the 2017 season. So they get 3 years of Brett Lowry in exchange for 4 years of Donaldson, plus the prospect package. I think a big part of it's going to be, how good does Franklin Barreto become? You know, as a prospect, he's still a guy that's moving up the ranks, and he hasn't necessarily cracked the top 50 overall for many people's lists, but he's the type of player who could. I mean, he's a shortstop right now. I think long-term the plan is for him to stay there, and he can actually hit pretty well too.
He's 18 years old. His hit tool is ahead of his defense right now. I project him to end up at second base, frankly. I don't think he'll stick at shortstop unless he improves markedly. But the bat plays, and I wrote a blog on Bernie's Baseball World where I broke down this trade, and I really called him possibly filet mignon. He could be the key to the steal. But, you know, that's 3-4 years out. You're talking about an 18-year-old guy, and you trade for him, but I don't think the deal goes down without him in it. He's clearly the prize of the prospects. The other two guys are pitchers, a right-hander and a left-hander, both pretty solid guys. I'm not sure that this deal is made without that shortstop in it. Nolan, the left-hander, I saw in the Arizona Fall League, you know, the guy is pretty, has good control and good command, especially for a left-handed pitcher, back of the rotation potential. Graveman, the righty, could, and I emphasize the word could, as I did in my blog, could end up in the rotation this year. He's pretty advanced, and he might be able to crack the Athletics rotation. But one of those two guys is going to have to make it for this deal to work.
Yeah, Graveman started his 2014 season at Lansing in the Midwest League, low A, got all the way up to the big leagues, showed pretty good control everywhere, gets a lot of ground balls, so even if he weren't in a pitcher-friendly environment, which he is now with the move to Oakland, he was going to have a chance of being successful, you know, even in Toronto with his skill set. I think the projection for him as a starter is more of a back-end innings eater type, whereas if he's a reliever, maybe there's something more there as far as a late-inning guy, but I think the A's would look at him as a possible number four starter and want to continue his development that way.
I think you're right. I think he could be draftable in fantasy. We'll know more in spring training as we see how the rotation, you know, folds out. I'm not sure that they're done dealing. They don't have a shortstop. Right now, if the season started today, I have no idea who plays shortstop for the Oakland Athletics.
I believe that would be the face of the Athletics, Eric Sogard.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm not sure I know who the shortstop is going to be. There will be a different guy there. We just have to wait and see who it's going to be.
Yeah, they're far from done. They got a couple pitchers coming off of injuries too. AJ Griffin and Jared Parker both coming back from elbow injuries. Maybe they end up getting back into the mix sooner rather than later. But Jeff Samardzija seems like the next piece to go in Oakland. And one last thought here on this trade. I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot over time as we look back and evaluate what the A's are doing here. But Brett Lowry, for all of his faults, even though he hasn't hit at the level we expected, just based on what he did when he first came up, he's a good defensive third baseman. Maybe not as good as Donaldson, but he's above average as a defender.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, the drop-off defensively is not great. There is a drop-off offensively, and we don't know what he can do if he played the whole season. Remember, you got to see him because he started his career with the Brewers. He was a second baseman with Milwaukee. And he didn't want to go to the Fall League and found himself traded. I wanted to see him in the Arizona Fall League, but I've seen a lot of him since when he's been healthy. There is upside still remaining with this guy. He doesn't have a lot of wear and tear from game playing, but he does from injury.
The other thing I'm excited about, too, is that Barreto, who played in the Northwest League last season, I would assume his first full season assignment is going to be low A Beloit, which is only about 45 minutes down the road from me. So I'll get a chance to see him up close at least once or twice over the course of this season. Let's move on.
He's 5 feet eight, 5 foot eight.
But he's so young that he can still grow. I mean, he could easily add a couple inches and fill out to the point where he's 5'11", 200 pounds or something at some point and be a lot more solid than he is right now. So I think that's going to go a long way toward determining how much power he can hit for as he moves up to the higher levels. I want to talk about another signing that happened last week, but it was a huge surprise, much like that trade was. Yasmani Tomas signed with the Diamondbacks, getting a six-year, $66.5 million contract. I watched some of the highlight videos last night. I saw some on MLB.com. I saw a couple on YouTube. The first one I watched, I think, was a compilation from his time as a professional in Cuba, and most of the footage looked like it was about a year old. He looked very round, to put it nicely, kind of that, just kind of stubby and round, which is not a compliment for a body type. But then I watched the video of him taking batting practice from the Dominican Republic. This was the video on MLB.com, and he looked a lot more athletic. He looked taller. He looked like his weight was distributed more evenly, like he had a more muscular frame. And even when he looked very round in the first video that I saw, he had pretty decent speed for a big guy. He moved around well. He showed good power, strong arm in the outfield. He looks like a very good player. Just turned 24 years old. And I think the challenge, Bernie, is that many people are going to want to compare him to Cespedes and to Puig and to Abreu because those guys have been successful after coming over from Cuba. But as good as I think Tomas might be, I don't think he really profiles quite the same way as any of those guys.
He profiles closer to Castillo, but in my opinion, from the video I've seen and the in-person I've seen of Castillo, he's a better overall player than Castillo. You know, this is a major coup for the Diamondbacks. So much for not having any money. This was their dipping their toe into international waters, and man, they came out very well in this. I picture him in that lineup, in the middle of the lineup, and shooting for the left field seats and hitting it. This is the type of guy that can bring a lot of excitement, put fannies in the seats in Arizona. This is a terrific signing. And I don't know what they're going to do with Trumbo. Trumbo now could be traded for pitching to the American League as a designated hitter, because the Diamondbacks suddenly have a crowded outfield. But Tomas will play, and he will play probably very well in Arizona.
Have to think Trumbo is on the move, and we're talking about another guy that you could have a few years of control on, so there's going to be some long-term value there to the acquiring team. And I'm trying to figure out where a guy like that might fit best. I mean, if you use him at first base, he can stay in the National League. Maybe a team like Miami, I know they're looking for a first baseman, maybe they'd have some interest, but otherwise, you take a look around the league, where does he fit? I mean, where does he actually serve as an upgrade to the current first base DH situation? Maybe a place like Oakland, but they seem to be going the other direction. The thing that would, I think, draw them to someone like Trumbo is the multiple years of control.
I don't know, but he will find a home. I mean, a bat like that in today's market with the lack of power, you know, I'm not so sure he's going to leave Arizona. I think we might be getting ahead of ourselves. But certainly he is the guy in the crowded outfield that makes the most sense. But just picture if they keep him, they've got Trumbo, Tomas, Goldschmidt in the middle of the order. That's pretty formidable.
Are you okay having three very good power hitters like that all from the same side of the plate, though? Or would you rather have a left-handed power bat to complement two of the righties?
You know, in today's world, I'll take anything I can get with power. The ideal world would be a lefty in between. It's just not possible anymore. A guy like Trumbo doesn't come around every day that could hit you, depending upon the park factor, 30 home runs a year. It's very possible. That's the type of thunder this guy could have if he gets his stroke down. And at the end of the year, the stroke was coming back after the injury, but I worry about his feet. I worry about the injury recurring. There's a lot of issues with Trumbo. He's a clank in the outfield. He's better at first base, but somebody wants him. You know, somebody needs him, and he'll find a home. It could even be in a place like Seattle, which has a designated hitter now, probably has their first baseman, but who knows? You always find a place for a power bat like that. I'm not saying it will be Seattle. It could even be the Yankees. Who knows where this guy will end up? Because in today's game, again, it doesn't matter if you have six first basemen, you find a place for them to hit.
Maybe even Texas, you know, they could look for a DH upgrade there. Absolutely. Potentially. But
absolutely.
Okay, so you have your choice. We're going to put on some GM pants. You can put on the GM pants of Jack Zarednik in Seattle, or you can put on the GM pants of Dave Stewart. Which pants do you want here? I'll take the other side.
I'll take Dave Stewart.
All right, so I'm playing the role of Jack Zarednik here. So ring, ring.
I need pitching from you, and I don't want that lefty you've got. I want Taiwan Walker.
Taiwan Walker. Okay, let me call you back. I mean, at the very least, they're going to think about it. Like, I think that's the kind of deal that actually could happen if it's one for one. It's 2 years of Mark Trumbo, too, by the way. I was looking at his arbitration and where he's at so far. Two more seasons before he hits free agency. So it comes down to two seasons of Trumbo for essentially six of Taiwan Walker.
Yeah, and I think Walker is the only guy that they could even scratch their head and consider trading for a guy like that. And I don't even think they would trade Walker. You know, now that they've got the hitting, they can't bust up the pitching. I think they're looking for one more bat, but I don't know what the price would be. It's going to have to be pitching, but it could be lesser pitching than Walker, maybe two lesser pitchers. You know, Trumbo hasn't proven himself yet. He really hasn't. So we have to wait and see. But there are teams, clearly, the Indians could use him. I know they have a first baseman. I know that Swisher is their designated hitter. They could get rid of Swisher possibly and put Trumbo right in there. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, a handful of different places he could go if the Diamondbacks are indeed going to move Mark Trumbo. One last question on Yasmani Tomas, Bernie. When you get a chance to see him in spring training, and I imagine you'll get to see him quite a bit, what are you going to look for in order to determine if he is ready to start the year in the big leagues? Because I think there is some debate as to whether he will be on the opening day roster or whether he might go the route of a Yasiel Puig and take a couple of weeks or even a month or two in the minor leagues before getting promoted.
I want to see how he executes his mechanics. I want to see the arm. I want to see, you know, can he close on balls? I want to see where his hole is in his swing, if he can hit breaking balls. Probably hitting breaking balls will be the first thing I'll look at. Then I want to see if he hustles. Castillo, by the way, did not hustle all the time when he was in Arizona. I want a guy that's going to bust it. I don't care when he's playing, if it's summer, fall, winter, or spring. I want a guy that's going to hustle. Maybe not all the time, but at least 90% of the time. I want to see this guy's makeup because I think the tools are there. I'm not worried. I don't need to see the power. I need to see the swing. The power comes from repetition against breaking balls and against big league pitchers.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the more exciting players to track as we get to spring training in February. Let's move on to a big signing that went down, and we alluded to it when we talked about the Mariners just a few minutes ago. Nelson Cruz has landed in Seattle. It's a four-year, $57 million contract. Safeco Field, from everything I've ever been told, is a gorgeous ballpark, but it is a difficult place for right-handed power hitters to hit. It's a long contract for a player of Cruz's age. Economically, I don't like the deal for a few different reasons, but if the Mariners can get over the hump, get back into the playoffs, or you know, win the AL West to get back to the playoffs, it's not going to matter that they're overpaying a little bit for Nelson Cruz. But if you think about the environment he's moving into, the one he's leaving in Baltimore, which is hitter-friendly, just like his home park in Texas, what do you think we're talking about in terms of power production from Nelson Cruz in 2015?
First of all, look at his home and away splits. If I'm not mistaken, he hit more than half of his home runs in the plus range away from Baltimore. Okay? So first of all, he's a good road hitter. You and I saw him put two away in Milwaukee, right? In one night.
Good place to hit.
Yeah. I think he's a 25 home run hitter. So if you're going over 25, I think you're going to lose. He's going to lose 15 home runs. But I think that's for a number of reasons. First of all, it's the park factor. He's another year older. Pitchers are more savvy on pitching to him. You know, he's very, very, it's very, very tough to hit for him to hit a slider down and away. I kept saying when we saw him in Milwaukee, don't put the ball on the inside corner. Get the ball down and away from him. even if he extends his arms, he has a tendency to fish for that slider and he misses it. Put the ball inside, you won't see it again. So it all depends. He's a great mistake hitter. He hits pitcher's mistakes. Seattle's a nice place for him with Cano, but it's going to cost him some home runs.
Yeah, half of his games are going to come in a park where, for his career, Nelson Cruz has hit .234 with a .309 on base and a .440 slugging percentage. I'm with you. I set the over-under at 26.5 home runs, thinking that's probably about where that line would be if you were making such a thing. So 25 is right in line with what I was expecting from him, too. The other thing to point out, he's got a couple of parks he's hit well in the division. Obviously, the Rangers ballpark in Arlington, a career .911 OPS there. He's hit well in Houston at Minute Maid Park. He's got a .1029 OPS in Houston. But he hasn't hit well at Angel Stadium, .654 OPS there. He also hasn't hit very well in Oakland, .571 OPS in his 53 career games in Oakland. So it's definitely not an ideal spot because, I mean, overall, I think it's easier to hit in the AL East than in the AL West, and having half your games in Seattle definitely works against you. But it provides some much-needed pop to that Seattle lineup. They were looking for right-handed power, and they certainly found it. It just makes you wonder, what type of player is he going to be in years 3 and 4 of that deal? The first 2 years of the deal might be just fine for Seattle, but I'm worried about the back half of that trade if I'm Jack Zirenzik.
Well, frankly, I think it was a year too long, but I think that extra year got him to Seattle. I think all the other deals he looked at were 3 years. This is just a hunch. I think they came in with a fourth year in Seattle and that did it, and it put him over the top. It's not, you know, it's a lot of money, but he's worth it. I, you know, 40 home runs is what this guy hit, right? So when you get that kind of bat, he's going to strike out a lot. He's going to leave a lot of men on base, but he's going to drive in his share. And he's going to score a lot of runs. And Cano's going to be a better hitter. You watch. Cano is going to be over .305. He might pick up 5-10 points on his batting average, score more runs. You know, you get a guy like that protecting you, and then you've got Seager behind, you know, behind both of them, this is a much better ball club.
Yeah, definitely a big addition in Seattle. Let's talk about the Boston Red Sox, Bernie. Since we last spoke, they have gone crazy in free agency, adding two big bats, Pablo Sandoval, 5 years, $100 million, Hanley Ramirez, 4 years, $88 million. We had a chance to talk about the Red Sox last week on the XM show. But when you look at what they have done so far, there obviously is more to come here. Yoenis Cespedes probably on the way out. Other players still could be moved beyond Cespedes. The Red Sox need pitching. But how surprised were you to see Sandoval leave San Francisco?
I was shocked, and I think it was that fifth year. This is another deal where I think maybe San Francisco offered him 3 or 4, but I can't picture what this guy's going to look like in year 5. I mean, he's huge right now, and he's not going to get much thinner. He could get much bigger. Although he has hit, and I was at our hot stove lunch today with people from baseball in the Phoenix area, and one of our colleagues mentioned that there are guys who just play big. You know, he went back to guys like Mickey Lolich, who pitched very heavy, was very effective. Sandoval just happens to hit no matter how, you know, what he weighs. However, 5 years from now, what's he going to weigh? And I think that's what the Giants saw. And I think they handled it with class. The Giants are a class outfit. They may have wanted him back. We don't know how badly. I don't think they wanted him back for year 5.
Yeah, that seemed to be the sticking point, probably that fifth year. Now, Hanley Ramirez got 4 years and $88 million for a player with his injury history. It sounds about right, just compared to what he could have had if he had stayed healthy for the better part of the last 3 years. At the same time, there's still a fair amount of risk there. I mean, $22 million per year for Hanley Ramirez when he's been prone to miss upwards of 50 games at times with a variety of different injuries. I'm curious to see if moving off shortstop either to left field or maybe staying at shortstop if they bury Bogarts, but I think he was introduced as the Red Sox new left fielder, if that might help him stay healthy.
Yeah, it might. And I think it's more than $22 million. It's $22 million plus the insurance policy money, because that will be very costly. He does have an injury history, but they're going to have insurance on him, because who knows if he can make it through a full season. It's a good place for him. It's back where he started. It makes that lineup extremely formidable. But I'm going to make a prediction here, and I thought about this today. I think Mookie Betts, even with all these outfielders, and we can tick them off, Mookie Betts is going to be in the starting lineup for the Red Sox, even with the Alan Craigs and the Victorinos and the Cespedeses. Those three guys are vulnerable, and now you've got Hanley Ramirez in the mix, and you've got Castillo in the mix. So I think Mookie Betts might be in that lineup.
I get the feeling that both Alan Craig and Yoenis Cespedes are guys they're going to trade, even though they just acquired them late last summer. But just my feeling on the matter. I think Alan Craig in particular is like, he's not that good.
We had one of our colleagues today was with Pittsburgh, and he was mentioning that it's very possible that Alan Craig could play first base for Pittsburgh. And, you know, when you think about it, he might be able to, because right now they've got Alvarez pegged in at first base. Who knows how long that'll last? Not much behind him. Gabby Sanchez is gone. And by the way, DFA'd. And now they need some depth at first base. Alan Craig may very well fit in Pittsburgh.
He's signed somewhat affordably through 2017. There's also an option on his contract, but I believe it's a $13 million option. So we'll see if he's worth anything close to that when that time comes. So there probably is some interest, but I don't see how Alan Craig, on the current configuration of the Red Sox roster, how he's even anywhere near being a regular player. I mean, he's one of the first guys I would bury on the depth chart, given the alternatives you have at every position. I'd rather play Napoli at first base every day than Craig, and it's not even close. I think a big part of that comes from the difference in power. My question for you with Alan Craig is that, where did the power go? I mean, this guy hit 22 home runs in 2012, and he did it in 119 games. The last two seasons combined, he's hit 21 home runs, and it's been in over 1,000 plate appearances.
Not only the power, but the batting average is gone. You know, everything's gone. And were the injuries that bad? You know, I know he couldn't play, but it's just like this, you know, in a snap of a finger, this guy went from very good in the postseason and very good in the second half of seasons to almost, you know, non-existent. It's really troubling. But DVR, there's a name that is getting lost in the shuffle. Remember all the talk about Jackie Bradley Jr.? He's gone. We don't even talk about him anymore.
No, he's going to go the way of like a Peter Burgess type player, where he's going to bounce around, and maybe there's going to be a team that looks at him and says, hey, you know what? Even if he doesn't hit, he's an outstanding center fielder, and he's very valuable to us that way. So maybe he ends up getting acquired by a team that just wants him purely for his defense. At the same time, you know, what will he become as a hitter? He hit everywhere he played up until the big leagues. Even at AAA, he looked like a guy that was going to be at least an above-average big league hitter. Good on-base skills, pretty good pop earlier in his career, too. Not a guy that was going to hit 20 or 30 home runs or anything like that, but, I mean, you know, 10 to 15 maybe was within the realm of possibility based on what we had saw at AAA in 2013.
A nice center field profile. You know, another guy, Bryce Brentz, he won't get a chance. So the Red Sox are so deep in outfielders, and that's why somebody's got to go. And they're going to go once the pitching settles down, I think, with John Lester. If they get Lester, then they can start moving hitters for another pitcher. If they don't get Lester, they start moving them sooner. But they have, what, three or four outfielders that are expendable.
Yeah, Shane Victorino still on the depth chart there. I think he's in the final year of a three-year contract. Maybe he's a guy they flip somewhere, a your problem for my problem sort of guy. At least it's an expiring deal, so it's not a big long-term commitment. But I just don't see any reason for them to keep him in the fold either if they want to give Mookie Betts everyday playing time. And I'm assuming Rusty Castillo plays every day. I continue to operate under that assumption.
I'm not sure. You know what? I'm not sure of that. I thought he would. But then when they start collecting these outfielders and I look at them in my mind, I say, yeah, I think he does. But where's he going to play? If I've got Betts playing center, which I think he should, he's the best athlete out of all of them that we've mentioned. So what does that do to these excess guys? It's a heck of a question, but it will be answered once this outfield situation shakes itself out, and the pitching comes to Boston.
And of course, this time next week, we'll be in sunny San Diego, and I imagine a whole lot will happen while we're there for the winter meetings. Let's move on to another deal that has gone down recently. Adam LaRoche signing with the White Sox, getting a two-year, $25 million contract. Really not a bad price for a guy that could come in and hit 25 or 30 home runs, drive in a lot of runs in the heart of the order, add some depth to the lineup behind a guy like Jose Abreu. I imagine those two in tandem are just going to work between first base and DH. And I forget what the distribution of playing time is going to be. LaRoche is a good defender, so he may end up getting more of the starts than Abreu in the short term if they want to try to max out defensively. But I could see it being kind of 50-50 where half the time LaRoche DHs and half the time he plays first base and Abreu simply takes the other spot. I mean, I'm looking at the White Sox. This move to me says they think they can actually win the AL Central. I mean, after what happened this year with the Royals making the run to the World Series, I think they look at their division and say, hey, you know what? We're not that far away from being capable of contending against the Tigers and the Royals.
That's why I don't think Ramirez is going to get traded. There's a lot of trade talk with him in the middle of it, but you need that good shortstop with that pitching if you're going to try to contend. And Ramirez is a very good shortstop. So I think Abreu and LaRoche, terrific in the middle of the lineup. By the way, we're talking about Tomas. When we saw Abreu in spring training last year, one look at this guy and you can say, this is the real deal. This is a finished product. And I'm going to look at Tomas with Abreu in mind as spring training players, not as comparable players, but I saw what I saw from Abreu. He was a finished product. And that's what I'm going to look for in Tomas. Is he as finished as Abreu was?
Yeah, important to point out, there's a three-year difference in age. Abreu, I believe, was 27 last year during spring training. Right. Tomas just turned 24. So there's going to be a pretty clear difference in terms of where they're at in their respective development curves. But, I mean, the White Sox, I think you're right about Alexi Ramirez. I don't see him going anywhere because they wouldn't be signing free agents like LaRoche if they were dumping players. I think they look at themselves and say, hey, you know, if our pitching comes together, we can be dangerous. Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, very good 1-2 punch at the top.
Yes, yes.
The depth is a little bit up in the air, so maybe they go to free agency to find another starter. But I also think that Carlos Rodon is very close to being in the big leagues. Maybe even a guy that will open the season in the rotation if he impresses this spring. He seemed to be maybe the quickest starter to the big leagues from the draft class last summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being Sale, Quintana, and Rodon as a 1-2-3 punch to kick things off for the White Sox.
And I think Chris Bassett's going to make the rotation as the five. I have a real good hunch about this guy. He's a good pitcher, and he pitched up there at the end of the season. I saw him in the AFL pitching out of the pen. I really like Chris Bassett. I like Eric Johnson, who's a big horse. I think he's still hanging around. There are guys that they have that can be pretty good for them. And they DFA'd Scott Snodgrass today. And by the way, Gordon Beckham was non-tendered, which means that he is now a free agent, the former White Sox second baseman. So things are happening. A lot of White Sox hanging around in the American League, but I look for them to really put the pressure on Detroit. They're a much improved club.
I like Gordon Beckham as a defender, and I'm going to give you a prediction to where he goes. I think he's going to Oakland. I think Beckham's going to be cheap, too. I think that's going to be a big part of the appeal. He's going to field his position well. He's not going to require a multi-year contract. He's probably not going to hit that much, but you put him in the bottom third of that lineup. You have other guys that can mix and match and manufacture runs. That's where I think Gordon Beckham ends up. And speaking of the A's, they've been busy aside from the big trade they made with the Blue Jays. They actually took a chance on Ike Davis, acquiring him from the Pirates after he was designated for assignment a little over a week ago. It's another pitcher-friendly park for Ike Davis. That's been a problem for him throughout his career, playing at Citi Field, playing in PNC Park. He hasn't put it all together just yet, but is there any reason to be optimistic about Davis with this latest change of scenery?
No. Not for me, DVR. I think I've seen enough. I think he's just too inconsistent. and I think he'll drive Billy Beane crazy. Billy Butler is there as well now. They've added another bat as a DH. I'm not sure Ike Davis is going to survive there. That's too big of a house for him. It's going to be a long poke, and I don't know that he can consistently do it. I mean, he's a good kid, and there's a lot to be said for him, but I just don't see him and Billy Beane making it together.
On base last year, .344, the highest on base percentage Ike Davis has posted since 2011. So at the very least, he draws a share of walks, but just 11 home runs in 427 plate appearances. Now two full seasons removed from that 32 home run season with the Mets back in 2012. We'll see what happens. They avoided arbitration with him. 1 year, $3.8 million deal for Ike Davis. We'll see if he's able to platoon, and he's not going to play against lefties. So maybe he finds a way to do enough against righties where he stays in the lineup on the larger side of a platoon, but you are not optimistic about what he brings. Staying in the AL West, some good news for...
Let's go over this in just a second. Brandon Moss hits out of what side?
He's a lefty. They play him in the outfield, though.
Yeah, I guess you're right. They do. You got Reddick out there who can only hit against, you know, right-handed pitching. They're pretty left-handed dependent on that club. I'm wrong.
I think they platoon a lot. They'll use a guy like Craig Gentry when they face a lefty. Billy Butler is going to play for close to every day, I would think, but he's a guy that hits from the right side. So they've got a few different pieces they kind of mix and match in there to make it work, but they are more left-handed than right-handed at the present time. And Brandon Moss, I think, is far from a lock to actually be healthy. I mean, he had surgery to repair a torn labrum in his hip in late October.
Right.
That, to me, is not an injury that you're necessarily going to recover from in time for opening day. And the outfield may not be an option for him in the short term. So I think that's an injury that maybe they were looking at and saying, hey, we want to have some options at first base and guys we can mix and match with. Well, Brandon Moss might recover into the regular season.
I think you're right. I think Moss thinks he'll be back for opening day, but that could be a reach. Davis is an insurance policy against that. And now we're going to have to see what happens. But these guys like Butler and Moss and Reddick, those are Oakland's type of players. For one reason or another, that's a profile. Another guy that comes to mind that could make it in Oakland, although he's also left-handed, is Markakis. Nick Markakis is a perfect fit there. Line drive gap hitter, perfect in Oakland. But again, he hits from the left side of the plate, and he's expensive.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fit, but I think they will look to upgrade that middle infield. As you mentioned earlier, no clue as to who would actually be their shortstop if the season started today. Staying in the AL West, some good news for Yu Darvish. He's been cleared to resume throwing, so it seems like he's progressing on a relatively normal schedule here this offseason. And maybe the Rangers were just extra cautious in a year where so many things went wrong. They had nothing to play for down the stretch, and maybe they were just resting Yu Darvish, but I took a closer look at his numbers, Bernie, and you know, two of the last three seasons, he's been a very average contributor in the WHIP category, and that gives me some pause. Like, that to me is not worth investing in Darvish as a top five starting pitcher. I think from a fantasy standpoint, I don't see enough upside in the ratios to go overboard when there's so many quality pitchers at the top of the board.
I totally agree with you. I think he's going to drop heavily because of the injury risk, because he walks too many guys, and I think the league is catching up with him. I really am concerned about him. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to have him, but certainly not in the top five, and I'm not sure he's in the top 10 anymore.
I think if he's healthy, I can justify putting him in my top 10, but I mean, I'd rather have Kershaw and Sale and Felix. I actually rather have Strasburg, and I'd rather have David Price, too.
Kluber,
I think, is up there. Cueto could be in that conversation. Bumgarner. Scherzer, depending on where he lands. Greinke, I think I'd even still probably take ahead of Darvish. I know Darvish has the raw ability to strike out 300 batters, and there are very few guys even capable of doing it, and I'm not saying he will, but it comes with a significant amount of downside in the WHIP category, and I don't think I'm willing to take on that risk early in my draft.
See, and I bet you we've just named 8 or 9. I didn't count, but we're up there already, you know?
Yeah, Jordan Zimmermann would be ahead. I mean, I think we got at least 10. I definitely with you on Kluber belonging in that group. If Matt Harvey's healthy, Matt Harvey versus Darvish is actually a legitimate question for me. I would take Darvish because there's a little less risk with Darvish that coming since the target's coming off Tommy John.
Iwakuma is better for me at this point. Iwakuma is a top 10 pitcher for me right now, believe it or not.
I've got him a little lower only because the strikeout rate doesn't quite stack up with the guys we're talking about. I think that's the one category where Iwakuma falls a little short, but the control is so good that the whip is probably about as stable as you're going to find with any pitcher in baseball.
And guess what? If you're in a win league, they're going to win more games this year. And that makes Iwakuma's value increase.
They should anyway, and it should actually give Felix Hernandez a slight uptick in value too. On the other side of the spectrum, a team I do not expect to win many games this year, the Philadelphia Phillies. Cliff Lee has also received clearance to begin his offseason throwing program as he returns from an elbow injury. I like Lee as a possible bounce back candidate. I mean, I know the age is a concern. He's 36 now, but at the same time, this is a guy who's just a year removed from a year where he had a 2.87 ERA, a 101 WHIP, 222 strikeouts in 222 and two-thirds innings. Against just 32 walks. I mean, we talked about Iwakuma's control.
He
That
doesn't walk anymore.
that's the level Cliff Lee's at, and he can strike out more guys than Iwakuma.
No doubt. If Lee can be healthy and he's never been hurt in his life, if he can return to health, watch out because he has something to prove.
And he should fall far enough in drafts where there's quite a bit of room for profit too. I think that's the other extra thing I like about Cliff Lee. We'll dive into him more once the spring training season gets underway in February, once we see him going through the progression with his teammates. It's been a busy offseason for the Mariners, Bernie. We talked about what they did with Nelson Cruz. They actually extended Kyle Seager recently, too. It's a 7-year, $100 million extension for Kyle Seager, who I think has become one of the more underrated players in baseball.
Yeah, really. He's right behind Donaldson for me. He's number three in the American League in terms of third baseman still has huge upside. We haven't seen Kyle Seager's best yet. This is a guy who's going to thrive there in that big park. He's a guy that's going to come off the board sooner than a lot of people think, with people who know fantasy and know the game. He had a rough start. He came on very strong. I think his home runs will go up. I think his RBIs will increase. His runs, every category, you're going to see upside from Kyle Seager.
We saw a career high 25 home runs from Seager in 2014. 96 runs driven in certainly helps having a guy like Robinson Cano there. May also benefit from having Nelson Cruz in the fold now. I mean, he's 27 years old, and the thing about Seager is that people have said all along his younger brother Corey is a better player. And if Corey Seager is better than Kyle Seager, the Dodgers really have a great prospect on their hands.
Corey Seager is an extremely good prospect, don't get me wrong, but he's still a bit raw. The hit tool I have not seen in two falls to the same extent that I saw with Kyle. Corey is a big kid. He may outgrow shortstop. He's more of a third base profile to me, and he's going to continue to grow. These two guys are extremely good ball players, no doubt about it. But Kyle Seager is a guy that's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think there's five more home runs there, Derek. I think he's a 30 home run guy.
Yeah, I was looking at his splits from the last couple of seasons. He had 10 home runs against lefties in 2013, just four against them in 2014. But if he finds a way to hit lefties out of the park a little more often, hit 21 home runs against righties last year, and he's always been quite a bit better against righties than lefties. Not a big surprise. I think you might be right. I think there is 30 home run potential in his bat. We'll see if there's any sort of issue as far as living up to the contract and the extra pressure he puts on himself. But the one other weird thing that I noticed looking at Seager's splits, typically he's been a more productive player outside of Safeco Field. And Safeco Field, as tough as it is on righties, it's not quite as bad for lefties. But even still, Kyle Seager's numbers away from Seattle, 2012 and 2013, his OPS was at least 140 points higher on the road than it was at home. But this year, 2014, 200 points better at home as opposed to on the road.
Yeah, and I think a lot of his problem, like I said, occurred in the first half. We kept waiting and waiting. Where's Seager? Where is he? When's he going to come on? But, he did come on, and he came on very well.
Let's take a look at a couple other items here, and one of them that it looks like a minor thing, but I think it's kind of interesting. The Dodgers acquired Juan Nicasio, and the only reason it's interesting to me is because when a pitcher leaves Colorado, it is the best change of scenery for any player possible. Short of a hitter going into Colorado, a pitcher getting out is probably the most exciting thing we could have. Now, Nicasio, I think he's got a shot to end up in the back of the rotation for the Dodgers. I mean, he could be their number five starter, or maybe the number four, depending on the health of Dan Heron. But he's always had somewhat intriguing skills. He's had a couple of scary injuries. He got hit by a line drive a couple seasons back and suffered a vertebrae injury. How much does leaving Colorado make you completely reevaluate a pitcher?
No, it's huge. There's no doubt about it, especially with a guy with an arm like he has. I've always liked this guy, and the only reason I didn't is because he pitched half his games at Coors Field. Get him out of there and into those big ballparks in the West, and he'll be fine. And if they don't go out and sign a guy like Shields or even play for a bigger free agent name, and I wouldn't put it past them, then I think Nicasio is they're five or four. And if that doesn't work out, he goes into the pen and he strengthens their pen along with Joel Peralta. I mean, they've done a good job adding pieces, so far, and they're far from done.
Yeah, I do think you're right about Nicasio being a fallback option for the pen, a guy that could be very good in the late innings going max effort. And the thing about it, too, if you look at the home road splits from the last few years, it wasn't as though Nicasio was a great pitcher away from Coors. I just wonder how much of that was a function of the development time he lost with injuries, the lack of confidence that he may have endured while pitching his home games in Colorado. There's just a lot of things that could have been going on there that really caused him to struggle both home and away. So getting a fresh start, he becomes someone that, at least in NL-only leagues, I'm looking at in the end game, maybe throwing a couple dollars at them in the auction, hoping to get some kind of profit here in 2015. A couple other loose ends I want to get to. The Dodgers made a couple of minor moves. One of them was actually a trade where they got Joel Peralta. Big move for their bullpen because their bullpen was a disaster last year. Brian Wilson, Chris Perez, among the guys that really let down Ned Coletti and company. Brandon League wasn't very good and chewed up $7.5 million of payroll in the process. I mean, Joel Peralta, probably the eighth inning guy right now ahead of Kenley Jansen if you're setting up that Dodgers bullpen.
That won't last long because they're going to go out and get another arm for the pen. They know that if they had middle relief in this at the same extent that, let's say, Kansas City had, they would be further along. Middle relief really let them down, as it did the Tigers. You get to that point and you don't have middle relief, you can't get to your closer. The game's out of control. That's where the Dodgers, stumble. They really didn't have the guy to get the ball to Jansen.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That was a major Achilles heel on that team. The Dodgers also made a minor trade today. They acquired Chris Heisey from the Reds. Obviously, some other moves coming as far as clearing some space in that outfield, but talk about a strange thing. The Dodgers go out and actually add another outfielder at the non-tender deadline.
What am I missing here, Derek? How many outfielders do they need? And I don't know that Heisey can play anywhere else. He's not going to play second base, which they need. He's not going to play shortstop, which they need. He's not going to play third base, which they need. So it says to me, maybe there's something going on here where somebody wanted Heisey, couldn't get him from Cincinnati. Maybe it's someone in the division, and they're going to package him with another outfielder or two. I think Crawford's gone. I think they're trying desperately to get rid of Ethier and now maybe even Heisey. How many outfielders can you have?
Yeah, it's strange. And Heisey really hasn't hit for 2 seasons. Had a couple of chances to add extended playing time this year with Cincinnati, and it really just didn't come together. A decent defender, but more of like a fourth outfielder type than anything else. We'll see what the Dodgers do to clear out some space for him. Couple
And I
other.
don't think, by the way, I don't think Kemp is going anywhere. I don't believe one rumor I hear about Matt Kemp. First of all, his price tag is too high. Secondly, if they lose Kemp, what's left? They really need this guy with Hanley gone. You'd have Puig in the outfield, and then they'd have Ethier. I just think Kemp is staying right where he is, and I think he's going to hustle and play very well.
I saw one made-up trade that said the Brewers were going to trade Ryan Braun and Jean Segura and end up getting back Matt Kemp and Brad Miller. And I was just scratching my head. I was like, what?
There's no way that the Brewers can afford that.
Why would they do that? Why would they want to do that? Like, I think Braun is signed for pretty much the same amount of money as Kemp, but for a longer time, like a longer period of time. Segura, I'd rather have Segura for the next 4 years than Brad Miller for the next five or four. And a half. I think it's going to be 5 years of Brad Miller. It just didn't make any sense to me at all.
Are Braun and Kemp comparable? I didn't think they had comparable contracts, but maybe they do.
Braun is signed affordably for a pretty long time, but
I know that.
With the thumb injury, I think it's now you look at it and you're a little bit worried about it. Previously, it looked like one of the more team-friendly long-term deals in baseball. So I think there's a lot to be determined there as far as what that might become. But yeah, so as it's lined up right now, Ryan Braun is signed through 2020. There's a team option in 2021. It's $19 million per. I think it drops down to $18 and $16 million in 2019 and 2020. So really not that bad of a contract compared to some of the big deals that have been thrown about the last few years.
Yeah, I guess. It's all relative. You know, it really is.
Yeah, really. What can I say? All depends on health, though, too. It seems like his progress so far from the cryptotherapy he's had on his thumb, it has been pretty good progress to this point. A couple other loose ends. Josh Willingham has retired. Cross him off your cheat sheet. I remember people got excited about him once when he was a catcher with the Marlins coming up. That was the big deal, is that he was a power-hitting catcher. He obviously moved away from behind the plate, became a useful corner outfielder, battled injuries throughout his career, but a good power hitter when healthy. But he has announced his retirement. One other minor trade that caught my eye, only because of the player involved, Raymond Fuentes, who was included in the Adrian Gonzalez deal between the Padres and Red Sox a few years ago, was traded from San Diego to Kansas City. And to me, anytime you put a fast guy on the depth chart in Kansas City, you have to pay attention, because Ned Yost likes to run so much that player could have value if he finds at bats.
He's got four Jackrabbits now, and they're all going to play. Dyson's going to find playing time, especially with Butler gone. Dyson could be a DH. Or, you know, who knows what they're going to do with this speed. They got very turned on by the speed. They're going to keep it up, and they're going to keep putting pressure on the opposition. So that's a very good move. I remember seeing this kid Fuentes when he was a raw rookie. He was very raw. Then he got hurt, and he fell off the world, you know, out of the baseball world. But he's back now, and I do think he could make that club. I really do.
Going to turn 24 in February. Former first round pick too. He was picked 28th overall by the Red Sox back in 2009. So definitely some pedigree there, and lots of base stealing ability if he can stay healthy. I think that's been a big question for him. 25 steals in like 90 games between Double A and Triple A this past season in the Padres system. All right, Bernie, it's been a pretty jam packed episode here so far, and I think we're still waiting for John Lester to sign. And I think once that happens, or once Max Scherzer signs, we're going to see some more of the dominoes start to fall. But based on what you've heard more recently, where do you expect Lester to end up at the present time?
Well, I heard a good analysis at lunch today, and everybody around the table seems to think he's going to the Cubs. And the reason I think he's going to the Cubs has nothing to do with his ability. It has everything to do with his relationship with Theo. I just think that Theo saw him through that cancer bout. I think they got tight during that. I think Lester is comfortable with Theo as his GM. And something tells me he wants to get into the National League. And maybe he's saying to himself, in 3 years from now, I can help turn this team into a World Series champ. Just a hunch that he could be going to the Cubs. If they don't get him, I really have to scratch my head and say, what's going on with the Cubs?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's where he ends up too, with Max Scherzer then going to Boston. All along I felt like wherever Lester goes, Scherzer goes to the other one, and the other one being one of the Cubs or the Red Sox.
I see Scherzer in New York. I see him becoming a Yankee, and I see Andrew Miller becoming a Yankee, and I think Robertson's going to stay a Yankee, and then all they need to do is go find a shortstop.
That's a massive spending spree. If they go get Scherzer and they bring in Andrew Miller and then re-up Robertson, I've heard as much as four years and like $48 or $50 million for David Robertson.
They are not going to let Boston take anything away from them. And that's why I think this Yankee Red Sox thing is going to really heat up. And then watch out for Toronto coming in through the back end. And Baltimore isn't going to fall asleep. They're going to go after Melky Cabrera, I think. And hopefully, in their minds, re-sign Markakis, put Melky in left, Markakis in right, and try to make up for the loss of Cruz. Or they may even go after another outfielder that we haven't even thought of yet. But Baltimore is not going to sit and let this thing, you know, let this parade pass them by. It's not going to happen.
Got a few late breaking items I want to run by you here, Bernie. I just received word the Padres have declined to tender Everett Cabrera a contract, making Everett Cabrera a free agent. I mean, we're talking about the lack of available shortstops. I know he's had some issues. He had the PED suspension. He was arrested in September on suspicion of driving under the influence of marijuana. But this is a guy that is still pretty young at age 28. He's not that far removed from being a very productive player. I mean, a guy that can steal bases and got a base at a .355 clip in 2013 before really falling off the face of the earth. Had a couple of different injuries in 2014. I have to wonder if a team like Oakland might go after Everett Cabrera.
Very possibly, but wouldn't they have tried to trade him in the last month and found no suitors?
Definitely.
You know, so they know what his market is, or they would not have non-tendered him.
Yeah,
or did they CFA him?
They non-tendered him. So I would assume they tried to trade him, but maybe their demands were too high, and the team said, you know,
he's
what?
He's going to end up somewhere. You're right. He'll end up somewhere.
The team probably said, we're not going to give him anything for him, but, you know, maybe we'll sign him later. That'd be the way I think a lot of teams approached him. Dominic Brown staying with the Phillies. He has been tendered a contract. Ben Revere tendered a contract. Not a big surprise there. The big name that signed as we started recording, Torii Hunter signed a one-year, $10.5 million contract to go back to Minnesota. Going back to the organization where it all began, I'd heard Texas as a possible landing spot, but it appears to be official, according to Ken Rosenthal, Fox Sports, Torii Hunter going back to Minnesota.
Good for him. I'm happy for him. And you know what? I'm happy for Minnesota. That was a good, you know, they had a good life together, and I'm glad they're back together. I like seeing that. You know, this is a guy who plays hard. His defense has declined. I really think it has in the last 2 years. The guy can still hit, though. No doubt about it. I thought he was Texas-bound, too. I agree with you. Good for Minnesota. I'm happy for them, and I'm happy for Hunter.
Yeah.
He is one heck of a good ball player.
Seems like a great guy, too, Torii Hunter. A lot of good stories about what he does off the field for the game of baseball. And looking at this outfield for the Twins now, Arcia is going to probably move to left field. Hunter will start in right, and Jordan Schaefer is going to be their fourth outfielder. I mean, Danny Santana is their center fielder right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's basically keeping that seat warm until Byron Buxton is ready. Whenever that happens to be, they're going to probably find a new place for Santana to play, but don't worry about that problem when it gets here. The Twins, to me, are still a couple notches away from teams like Kansas City and Detroit and Cleveland and the rest of the division, but they can close that gap pretty quickly once some of their young talent becomes big league ready.
You know, they're five pitchers away.
they Phil
really
Hughes.
Are. Well, I'm talking pen and rotation.
I see.
I think they're at least five pitchers away, and that's a lot. They need at least two starting pitchers and at least three guys in the pen that they can count on and trust. And that's tough to close in on that gap. And there aren't too many of their prospects that I really like in terms of pitching. Their position players are okay, but their pitching prospects I'm not nuts about.
Very curious, too, thinking back about what we just mentioned with Everett Cabrera. Where do the Padres go at shortstop from here? I mean, is Jace Peterson, is it a younger guy like that that takes over? I mean, there's not much out there. Are they going to go sign a Stephen Drew and try to squeeze some value out of a player like that? I mean, I don't know what their backup plan is. I think that's what made the decision to non-tender Everett Cabrera so surprising.
Well, Jace Peterson is the guy they want to play shortstop. Now, whether it's in 2015 or not, I don't know, but we saw him in the fall league. And he's a good player, there's no doubt, but he isn't the same guy as some other prospects that we've seen, but he's a little bit more advanced. He's a good prospect, let me put it that way. I think he's one of those guys that could scuffle against major league pitching.
All right, Bernie. So we've covered a lot of ground this week, and next week we'll probably be recording live from San Diego at the winter meetings. But what's coming up between now and then? What's going to be written at MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com, and at the blog Bernie's Baseball World?
Well, I would like people to check out what the blog is called. We might be talking filet mignon. It's at Bernie's Baseball World. You can get it by going to BerniePleskov.mlblogs.com. That's the biggest thing for the week. I'll be doing another one on an update of before Sunday, before I leave for the winter meetings. I'll be doing an update on the offseason so far. And I've got three pieces on AFL prospects coming out next week. They are accompanied by voiceover videos. So that's on MLBpipeline.com. Definitely. How about you, DVR? You're working on the magazine, right?
All in on the magazine. Lots of player outlooks, lots of editing in the next couple of weeks, working on a couple of different articles, and some rankings, a lot of stuff to do between now and the deadline for that. I think it's going to be done in early January, but that day is going to get here much too soon.
And we're you and I are working on an article together for the magazine. Let's tell the folks what we're doing, and then let's talk about how let's just talk about what's going on in the magazine that we're co-authoring.
Yeah, we're going to set up an article, basically a short hops article, talking about the writing up the players that we don't agree on. And I think it's always good to have that, because if we looked at every player and saw the same thing, it'd be boring. We would always draft the same players. We'd always buy the same players in the auction, and we wouldn't have any players to go back and forth on. So we're going to take a look at probably 10, 12 different guys and give our take on why we like or don't like a guy that the other guy happens to like or dislike.
Basically, it's would we draft him or will we not draft him? And, you know, Derek and I generally see eye to eye, and I'd say 90%, but we did come up with 10 or 15 that we totally disagree on, and we hope you'll get the magazine and check it out, because we're not going to tell you who they are.
Yeah, rotowire.com/magazine if you'd like to get the order, and you can pre-order that now. It'll ship in mid-January. You'll probably get it just before the Super Bowl, I would imagine, once it's printed and shipped out. So be sure to dive in there if you can. And Bernie, as we close things out, looking forward to meeting up with you in San Diego next week.
Yeah, it'll be a great time, Derek. Lynn will be with me. We'll have dinner together. We'll see each other virtually every day. And we'll be talking baseball on Short Hops and doing much more live from San Diego next week.
That's going to wrap things up for this episode of Short Hops. The views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, please contact Shannon at rotowire.com. For Bernie Pleskov, I'm Derek Van Riper. Have a great week.